If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, this is Henry Melcher, a supervising producer at Late Night.
And this is Sal Gentile, I'm the Closer Look supervising writer.
So it is only 2 weeks until Election Day, and we wanted to squeeze in one last Late Night cram before the election and swap predictions and ideas about the seemingly endless campaign before November 3rd.
So, Henry, how do you feel now compared to how you felt a month ago?
So I have felt very confident about Joe Biden's chances to win since the summer. And everyone in my life tells me to shut up when I say I think it's going to be a Biden landslide, because I generally do think it's going to be a Biden landslide. And I'm feeling more and more confident in that prediction as more state polling comes out and we're seeing these early vote numbers. And as we get closer to the election, Trump is doing nothing to change his political fortunes. He is just digging a deeper hole for himself. But I will say, I felt just as optimistic in 2016, which is a huge caveat on my optimism for 2020, even though the numbers are different. I was looking today, actually, if you look at the 538 polling average, Biden is up 10.5. And at the end of the campaign, 2016, Hillary was up 6.9. Just to further boost my optimism, they give Joe Biden an 87% chance of winning. 2016, Hillary had a 71.4% chance winning, which is a very good percentage. But the 30% was strong in that one. How do you feel?
I'm doing everything I can not to make predictions because that's never worked out in the past. So here's what I'll say.
Is this because you predicted John Delaney would be the nominee?
I did. I predicted that former Maryland Congressman John Delaney would be the Democratic nominee.
Up until like the Iowa caucus, I feel like you never wavered.
I stuck with him past when he dropped out. I kept telling people he's going to get back in the race. Don't worry. Like,
he suspended. He didn't end. It was you could undo a suspension.
I said he's just biding his time. He's lying in wait for the perfect moment to strike. At the convention, I was like, all these delegates are going to go flooding over to
that's right,
to Delaney at the last minute. So, you know, because of that, I'm a little nervous about making predictions. But like you said, the polling average is what it is. And more so than the number itself, because I think you can expect, and everyone has been expecting, some amount of tightening, although it hasn't happened yet. If anything, Biden's been gaining recently, widening his national lead. And a lot of state polls have actually looked better for him recently than they even did over the summer. So the polling has been very good for him, but even more so, I think the thing that inspires confidence is the stability of his lead and of the race overall. In 2016, the average fluctuated fairly.
It got really close. Frequently. I was looking at this today. Yeah, this has been two straight lines with a healthy margin between them. I do think it's worth looking at the early vote numbers, which are pretty incredible. So credit to the U.S. Elections Project for running down these numbers. It's Friday afternoon. These numbers are updated hourly. But as of today, 21,825,770 ballots have been cast. That is 15.7% of the total turnout from 2016. Voters have requested 81,027,051 ballots. If you are a political nerd who wants to follow these numbers obsessively, I highly recommend following @ElectProject on Twitter. That has just been a confidence boost every minute when I check his Twitter feed. I will say, though, I mean, I think it's important to look more at those numbers instead of trying to read into the photos and videos of long lines at polling places, because we just don't know what exactly that tells us. You know, it could suggest there will be increased turnout, or it could be a busy time of the day, or there could be malfunctioning voter equipment, or it could be very crowded because it's one of the few remaining voting locations in a community where Republicans have systematically made it harder for people to vote, which, of course, you know, that's a form of voter suppression. Regardless, I think it's safe to assume that all of Election Day, there will be newscasters in different cities talking about how long the lines are. It will be difficult, but I would just suggest not reading too much into that. Also, the other thing is, Sal, and I'm sure you can relate to this, every line looks long now because you have to stand 6 feet from each other.
Yes.
Like the other day, my wife and I were going to go to Bed Bath & Beyond, and it looked like the line was going to be endless, and it was 5 minutes because everyone's standing 6 feet apart.
It's true.
What does Trump call New York? An apocalyptic hellhole or something? Or
oh, yeah. Well, you're all. It's also an anarchist jurisdiction.
That's what it is, an anarchist jurisdiction, famously. Yeah, a lot of people are definitely voting. We are two and a half weeks away from the election.
Oh, but here's a question for you, Henry, having looked at the numbers, because I know there's a lot of debate about this, and maybe we don't really know the answer. In fact, my suspicion is we don't. But like, is there any way to know or guess how much of the early vote is additive? Like, how many people are voting early who might not necessarily have voted, or how much of it is indicative of larger turnout? Or whether it's just cannibalizing what would have otherwise been Election Day vote.
This was interesting. So the Times said that just 26% of Democrats said they plan to vote in person on Election Day, compared with 56% of Republicans. So we don't quite know until the final votes are cast how much turnout changed. But I think the expectation, at least, is that more Democrats will be voting early than Republicans. Republicans tend to vote on Election Day versus early. And certainly in the pandemic, there are way more people who are going to be mailing in ballots and voting early than waiting in line on Election Day. So I think we're going to find out, but definitely there seems to be a tilt towards Democrats voting early.
It's unfortunately very difficult. And I know every day you want to consume every morsel of information. I certainly do. I'll speak for myself. Like, scrolling through Twitter, reading the news, whatever, you want to discern what that means for the election. And unfortunately, and this is going to be the case on Election Day itself as well, you know, as much as you want to read into those things, everyone's just going to have to try to be as patient as possible.
It's been interesting because I think there was this conventional wisdom a few months ago that we will know on Election Day. And then now the conventional wisdom is that we will not know for days or weeks. Because, yeah, as we were just talking about, there's going to be a huge share of voting that comes in through mail-in ballots, absentee ballots. The Times also had a really nice, helpful little infographic, love an infographic, about which states can start pre-processing ballots ahead of the election. And they kind of broke it apart in terms of the swing states. So upon receipt, Arizona, Georgia, Minnesota, and Nevada can start processing early. So that seems like we may be getting a sense of those states earlier than we assume. Mm-hmm. Before Election Day, Florida, Iowa, Michigan, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Ohio. And on Election Day, two of the most pivotal states who cannot start pre-processing until Election Day, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin.
Oh, boy.
I mean, Pennsylvania seems to be the key state here.
Pennsylvania is the linchpin, and their law basically, state law essentially says you have to wait until like 3 years afterwards to start counting the ballots. Like,
and you still think it's going to be John Delaney. It's just unbelievable.
Just wait and see the write-in votes, okay? Just Delaniacs are all over the place, okay?
The Delaniacs.
There's the shy, you know, people talk about the shy Trump voter. People are counting out the shy Delaney voter. They're extremely shy. Yeah.
They're extremely shy.
I've been doing my own canvassing on the street where I go up to everybody and I say, are you voting for John Delaney or not? And, you know, people act like you're crazy, but it's all an act because they're trying to hide.
They're
know.
So shy. So let's talk about what the next year could look like. Let's go. Do you want to go bad side first or good side first? So there is the one side where Trump wins.
Right.
And then there's the other side where Biden wins.
Okay.
It's like a good news, bad news. What should we talk about first?
Well, I mean, the world in which Trump wins is obviously an unmitigated nightmare of previously unforeseen proportions. Like, it's genuinely difficult to even fathom how horrific that is, that outcome is. So why don't we just maybe not talk about that? Trump obviously has decided to completely disregard the pandemic, just pretends like it's just not even happening. There's no national cohesive plan whatsoever for dealing with it. So if Trump were to win, that would just continue. So that's horrifying to even imagine, plus all the human rights abuses, plus all the abuses of power, just everything times a million. That's awful.
Yeah. So talk Biden about, wins.
Yes, if Biden wins.
If Biden wins, I think there's a good chance that Democrats flip the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
If the Democrats pick up four seats and win the presidency, they've got Kamala Harris as the tiebreaker. That is with the assumption that Doug Jones loses his race in Alabama, which I think is a...
It seems like a pretty good assumption right now.
Pretty good assumption.
To Tommy Tuberville? Ridiculous. He sounds like a children's cartoon character. Like, Tommy Tuberville. Yeah, like from...
So he's a coach, right?
He's a college... He was a college football coach.
That qualifies you to be a United States Senator.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
The momentum in the race is basically that Trump will never stop. He will never shut up. He'll always hog the spotlight, which is always politically bad for him. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's always the case that the more Trump talks and the more he exposes himself to the national news spotlight, the worse his polling is. The debate is a perfect example of that. Yep. Because he has no impulse control, because he's a fundamentally deranged sociopathic person. So he has no impulse control. There obviously is no coherent strategy to his campaign. He just behaves the way he behaves. So the more he talks, the worse it is for him politically.
Yeah.
So there is a degree to which, like, in a lot of ways for Biden, for anybody running against him, the politically wise thing to do is to let Trump be as toxic as he normally sounds when he campaigns on his own. And his poll numbers are awful when he does that. And so there is a degree to which, like, I get the political strategy of, like, from the Biden campaign of just being a steady presence. I mean, look, he's not hiding. Like, the town hall, the ABC town hall is a perfect example. Biden stayed for, like, I think, like, half an hour or something afterward and kept answering questions from people in the hall. So he's accessible. The campaign is accessible. He's answering questions. I think he actually has extremely detailed policy positions on many things that you can easily look up. So with all that said, Trump just consumes so much of the oxygen. And when he does, it's almost always politically bad for him.
Yeah. I mean, imagine being a human being on planet Earth and knowing.
Imagine.
Imagine if you could, listeners.
You sounded super high just now. Like, that was a super...
You guys.
Imagine, like...
Well, I live in this anarchist jurisdiction, so it's easy to get.
Yeah.
So guys, imagine, right? Like, you land on this planet. No, but I mean, do think about the fact that if you were to know that every time you open your mouth at your place of work, you would make things worse for yourself.
Yeah.
Just imagine existing.
You'd remind everybody
how bad
intolerable you are.
And everything you said, like so many different points in the day, whether with coworkers or friends or family. So yeah, any part of your life, when you speak, you will lower people's expectations and opinion of you.
Yes.
And that is the president of the United States.
Yeah.
We now operate under the assumption that if the president of the United States speaks, he will make matters worse for himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is. But it's because, you know, he's such an irredeemably, horrifically monstrous figure. And the crazy thing is, and this gets to, we can talk a little bit about, like, what happens in the post-Trump era in the Biden presidency.
Trump TV, baby!
Yeah, right. But he's been widely disliked since the beginning, since he launched his campaign. The polls have been as stable as polling has ever been on any topic. It's been as consistent in a majority of Americans disliking Donald Trump. And yet, because we have this fundamentally counter-majoritarian anti-democratic system in which the Electoral College allows the popular vote loser to win the presidency, in which the Senate allows a minority Americans to vote for a majority of senators and so forth and so on, the people who don't actually command popular support can wield power. And that's been the story of our politics in many ways since day one of the Trump campaign, is he's widely disliked. Most people do not like him. And so every time he talks, it reminds people they do not like him. And yet, because we have this system, it allows him and the Republican Party, which is also deeply unpopular with a majority of Americans, to wield power. And so that brings to my mind a big question that I have about what the sort of post-Trump Biden presidency, and I'm curious what you think, Henry, is. How do you prioritize like democracy reforms? Like, when do you do those? You know, and so we're talking like abolishing the filibuster, abolishing the Electoral College, potentially expanding the size of the Supreme Court, admitting DC and Puerto Rico as states into the union to make the Senate in particular more representative. How do you prioritize those? When do you do them? For example, there's a couple different things you could do. The broadly popular and arguably one of the most urgent things that a Biden administration could tackle first is healthcare. Not only do we have an out-of-control pandemic right now, but on top of that, it's under threat by the Supreme Court lawsuit that's going to be heard just days after the election. So you could say we should definitely do healthcare first. On the other hand, you could say the underlying framework that in many ways is responsible for this crisis of democratic legitimacy we've had over the past few years and this authoritarian lurch is our counter-majoritarian anti-democratic system. And so maybe we need to prioritize those democracy reforms first to fix the system. But I don't know the answer to that. What do you think?
It's interesting because the first House bill that the new Congress passed, H.R. 1, was the For the People Act. And this is an act of democratic reforms, ethics, laws, changes, expanding voting rights, addressing gerrymandering, limiting big money in politics.
Fixing the Voting Rights Act after the Supreme Court gutted it in Shelby versus Holder. That's another thing.
But so I think it's interesting because the House Democrats, they made that H.R. 1. Their big push was democratic reforms, and Biden has expressed interest and openness to attacking some of these reforms. I mean, I think there's a difference between making Election Day a federal holiday for federal workers and granting statehood to D.C. and Puerto Rico. That's just going to be a harder lift. I think the Democratic Party writ large does understand that those reforms are fundamental, because at least in 2020, there was a common refrain from people on the campaign trail, certainly like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, was that the system needs rethinking. You can cherry pick and change rules and regulations here and here, but the system overall needs changing. And I think H.R. 1 is something that could be really interesting. I think fixing Obamacare, of course, will be urgent. I mean, that is an urgent need. If the Supreme Court strikes down parts of Obamacare, Congress is going to have to find ways to salvage that law as quickly as they can in a 6-3 Supreme Court proof way, which is interesting because now we're flashing back to 2008. I think, again, the issue is going to be stimulus. We don't know what the economy is going to look like.
That's right. Exactly. There are, you know, a dozen different crises happening all at once right now. It's like the climate crisis. You mentioned the economy. There's immediate suffering happening right now that an incoming administration will have to do something about immediately to alleviate so much suffering from the pandemic, from the economic crash. There's the massive yawning inequality in the recovery. And that gets to some of the systemic changes that need to happen to reorganizing the economic and political system above and beyond just the immediate stuff that needs to happen. There's just so much that you have to tackle. And it's just really difficult. Like, I have a hard time imagining what order you do them in. And how, you know, how you prioritize, I really don't know, but there's so much that needs to be done.
I mean, that's why getting a Democratic Senate is so incredibly important, because if Biden wins and there's not a Democratic Senate, I don't know what, you're going to see the same sort of obstruction you saw with President Obama.
And abolishing the filibuster, which seems like it's going to require flipping enough seats to lose a few of the filibuster holdouts, like Dianne Feinstein and Joe Manchin. So ideally, you know, really one of the linchpin things, you know, in addition, obviously, to the most important thing, which is beating Trump, is hoping we can not just get Democratic control of the Senate, but flip enough seats that filibuster reform is possible, because then that kind of paves the way to being able to do all of this stuff.
Yeah. So when Obama was elected, the economy was losing about 800,000 jobs a month. So clearly the first thing the administration had to do was the stimulus. And we don't know what the economy is going to look like when or if Biden takes office, but some sort of economic stimulus will likely be pretty high up on his priority list. So President Obama had to extend a lot of political capital to get the stimulus through Congress. And as that was happening and in the months that followed, he went forward on healthcare reform. And there were many people in the administration, including Biden, according to some reporting, who didn't think that was the best place to spend more political capital so early on in the administration. So obviously, Biden is now one of the biggest Obamacare boosters. At the bill's signing, he famously said it was a, quote, big deal. So I hope his memories of those early Obama administration days motivate him to not just pass an economic stimulus, but to really go big and bold in other programs like healthcare and climate. And there is Democratic control of the House, and there are literally hundreds of bills that have passed the House that have not been up for a vote in the Senate. Mitch McConnell called these bills, I really love this quote, he called it a left-wing parade of bills. And I'm like, great.
Yeah, left-wing parade sounds super fun. Yeah, I miss parades.
He also called H.R. 1 a parade of horribles.
That sounds like something out of Hunger Games or something.
The parade of horribles.
Yeah, commence the parade of horribles.
From an anarchist jurisdiction.
Yeah, exactly.
If you enter into an anarchist jurisdiction, you will be overrun by a parade of horribles.
The more I think about it, I mean, it's just impossible because I'll go around in circles forever. But like, definitely immediately, you have to alleviate the immediate suffering. And so economic stimulus is one of the first big things they'll need to do. Healthcare. But even in that case, you'll probably need to abolish the filibuster first. This gets into a little predictions of what's going to happen, you know. So one thing we know is going to happen, because they're already telegraphing it, is Republicans are going to suddenly rediscover their concerns for fiscal responsibility and their opposition to deficit spending as soon as a Democrat takes office.
That is the safest bet you can make in American
politics. Exactly. That is the... If you're looking for a safe prediction, if you have like an election pool or something like that, or you want to win some money with some friends, that is the number one safest prediction that you can make. Once election day is over and the dust settles, Republicans will probably on election day, probably before, I think some of them are already pivoting in advance of election day because they know the outcome that's most likely is that Biden's going to win comfortably. They're already telegraphing that they're going to suddenly rediscover their concerns about fiscal discipline. And after years of profligate spending on the wealthiest people in the country, on tax cuts and so forth. So that's going to happen. We know that's going to happen. And so they're not going to get any Republican cooperation, obviously. And I hope the Democrats and Biden dispense of any fantastical notions that they'll suddenly be able to like get Republicans to work with them, because that's not going to happen.
I think Biden has not come to that conclusion, but you do see him moving a little bit more towards the realization that they're not going to be huge partners for him, I would say.
He said some stuff in the very beginning and during the primaries that was worrying, like, oh, you know.
Deeply worrying.
Yes. Oh, look, I got everything will go back to normal once they don't have this crazy guy Trump. And they're like, that's not the case. I think we all need to get acquainted with the idea that Trumpism, as it currently exists, is the beating heart of the modern Republican Party. Like, that's who the Republican Party is. Now, it may change at some point. I don't know. It's impossible to make these predictions. But he is very obviously in touch with what the core Republican identity is right now. Mm-hmm. And the Republican Party and Fox News and the media apparatus that's built up around it, they're going to stay like that. They're going to still be like that. So I think that's just worth remembering. Like, that's the Republican Party that we're dealing with. It's not going to return to suddenly being like a responsible governing party. It's not. It's a deeply incompetent, deeply irresponsible party that's incapable of governing. And that's what it will be like even after Trump is no longer president. So it's just worth remembering that. They're not going to suddenly be like, okay, let's work with Joe Biden and the Democrats now.
Right. All right. We're very close to this election.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good, but every day there's something else that freaks me out. So
yes, it's true. But then again, we're always freaked out.
Especially now in this anarchist jurisdiction.
That's right. You have a lot to be freaked out about with all the chaos surrounding you.
I mean, it is. I'm surprised we got through this safely. Well, Sal, this has been lovely talking to you.
Yes.
I've not been in the same room with you for over 6 months.
Yeah, longer than that, since March, right?
Well, maybe we'll talk again after the election and see how many of these predictions are correct.
Yeah. Okay. We will.
All right.
We'll do that.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night Podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.